I'm gonna keep going. You don't do this to me. You're trying to get me to go off the rails.
I could feel the Washington Post.
So they, hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 11 of the Blue Sedition Podcast. I'm Nate Brady alongside my co-host, Mike Smith. Mike, what is happening?
Well, I don't know how to put this, but there's an election coming up soon.
Oh, is there?
There is. In these United States, even.
I don't have anything to vote for. I've already voted.
And... that's true.
Got it.
I guess the election's technically over then.
Yeah, for me.
Well, good job, everyone.
Thank you. It's over. Okay. Yeah, there's a big election coming up. You have some stuff to say about that?
It's big.
It's big.
It might be the biggest general election in our lifetimes, I think.
I feel like I hear that every election. Is it true this time?
I think that it's not a stretch to say that Donald Trump being president a second time would be catastrophic for the American people.
I mean, it's not going to be catastrophic for the American people he killed the first time, at least.
You got to look
on the bright side. Those people are dead. So
their suffering is at an end.
Yeah.
Mercifully. Whereas you and I must continue to suffer.
So when he says, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? First of all, yes, I am. But there is a key group of people that cannot answer that question. And it's the ones that died from his mishandling of a pandemic.
Well, but as a Christo-fascist, you have to assume that he believes in an afterlife. So those people have moved on and...
you
are better than they were 4 years ago.
No. You have to make two assumptions to get to that point in your statement. Is to assume he even understands what being a Christo-fascist is.
Right.
Never mind the fact that he's definitely not a Christian.
Since when has that stopped Christo-fascists?
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. I'm actually reading right now Sarah Posner's could be Posner. I'm not sure because I haven't heard it out loud. Her book called Unholy, which is about Trump's rise with the Christian nationalists. It's really interesting read right now.
I think that that one's specific to Trump, right? But it seems like every time the right moves a little more toward Christian nationalism, there's a new book talking about the current president and slipping down that slippery slope. It's been a theme for the last 40 years, basically since Reagan, where they embrace Christianity more and more, and their enemies are painted more and more as evil and anti-Christian, anti-Christ, you know?
I am gonna I'm gonna save any what may appear to be Dem bashing until after the election is over. And I don't wanna stomp on everybody's favorite Democrat, Jimmy Carter. I know you're a big fan of Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy.
I saw the way you just looked at me like you son of a bitch.
I love Jimmy. Watch yourself.
You swear to God. But Jimmy has to take a lot of the blame for getting Christians to really care about politics, I guess. So anyway, I'm not going to go there. Let's talk about, I think one of the things maybe we can dive into first is there is an event that happened just a couple of days ago in New York City that may have changed the direction, the course of this election, which is pretty mind-blowing to me. There is actually a comedian that may go down in history, better or worse from his point of view, for stopping fascism. Let's talk about that. There was a rally at the Madison Square Garden, right?
Yes.
Headliner, Donald Trump. And he had some opening acts, I guess. And that did not seem, that didn't go very well. What are your thoughts about what happened?
Well, I'll say that outside of the comedian fellow,
it
was more of the same. It was Trump's goons just parroting whatever they think he wants them to say, and it's more of the same. It's the Kamala Harris's, brain damaged or whatever, and,
right?
And just talking about how evil the Dems are, and they want to take your guns. With the standard marching nonsense the Republicans like to parrot when they're doing their rallies. But then the comedian, I feel like, didn't get the memo that he's supposed to help them do the dog whistling as opposed to just stating what they feel out loud.
Yeah. So I have a couple of things. I have a video I want to play, not of the comedian, but along the same lines of what we're talking about here. But also, I want to talk about Tony Hinchcliffe. So I've seen, unfortunately, Tony Hinchcliffe live at the Ice House in Pasadena in California. My wife and I saw him, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago. We thought he was absolutely awful. And he's still awful. In fact, I forgot the guy even existed because he literally doesn't exist. I mean, he's not on SNL or mainstream. Right, right. I mean, so the fact that he was even at this rally, I think one, it goes to, well, no other comedian was going to freaking do this.
Right.
And then two, they had to have seen his work and gone, oh yeah, we like this.
This is our guy.
Yeah, this is a guy. Okay.
I'm going to stop you right there because as we have done many times on this podcast, we point out that I don't think there's anybody in their orbit who does either fact checking or due diligence or any of these things. Otherwise, we wouldn't have memes like them having the press conference at the
total lawn care
center or whatever it's called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's one phone call.
Yeah.
That's just, this is Four Seasons, the hotel, right?
Right.
And they go, no,
this is Four Seasons. I mean, total landscaping.
There's nobody there in their orbit who like does the simplest due diligences ever. So they were like, hey, we got this comedian and he wants to open for Trump. And then Trump says thumbs up. And that's how it happens.
Okay. So you're letting him off the hook. I don't know
anything more about him, I'm guessing.
Well, you're letting him off the hook a little bit because one of the things that they tried to back away and they say, we didn't know he was going to say stuff like that. We didn't know whatever, but now it's coming out that every single comedian and speaker had to basically run their thing by Trump's team for approval. Okay, so the night up. So that means that the words he was going to say that night were approved by somebody in the Trump organization or the Trump campaign.
Okay, just playing the advocate.
Okay.
Was that person Laura Loomer?
And if it was, you're doing a fantastic job.
You're doing Laura. A great job, Laura.
Keep it up. So some of the pushback that I'm getting, you know, we're out on social media, we're hearing what people are talking about regarding this, and they're saying it's just a comedian, you know, it was just a joke. Give it up. Well, first of all, it just fucking was not funny. Like,
And I think that it's the same sort of like sane washing. There's that term that's going around. I saw that a favorite of ours, I know, John Stewart, came out and he's like, at some point you got to just let comedians who are crass be comedians. And I'm like, brother, you were fighting against this sort of nonsense for years and years. What suddenly changed for you? Like, where do you draw the line in this particular venue? Like, is it just because he's doing a political rally and he's trying to think that the base there will laugh at this sort of thing? Does it get away with it? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I am actually a proponent of free speech, okay? Unlike somebody like Elon Musk, who pretends to be a free speech absolutist. And I will say, and I don't want to sound too libertarian here because I'm definitely not, but I am also okay with the free market, which is what it is doing right now, saying this guy is garbage. And that's what they're doing. Nobody's going to want this guy anywhere.
No, no.
Right?
Yeah. You know, I think that you and I watch a lot of different like comedy specials and things, and there's like a way and a time and a place and how you're addressing certain like things like ethnicity and gender and race and all these things, and you can do it in a way that is both like funny and crass but not like outright offensive.
Yeah,
I think that like there's what is his name?
Okay, which one?
Trying to think of John
Mulaney.
Oh my god, no, he's funny too, but no, he had a bunch of stand-ups recently on Netflix.
Okay,
but he goes into a lot of like race jokes that I think are just actually funny, but I think it's more like derogatory inwards, you know, like if I get up on stage and make a bunch of white guy jokes, I think people would accept that I'm making jokes for joking's sake, as opposed to like trying to, you know, single out minorities.
There's one guy, you probably weren't talking about him because you said John, but there's one guy that I think a lot of people on the left really don't like, who I actually, there's several clips that I do enjoy of him, is Shane Gillis. So I don't know if you know Shane Gillis at all, but he does some racial jokes. Like for one, he does, you know, George Washington's slave quarters. And, you know, he's talking about like reenactments, and he's like there and how awful he feels just being there. And like the slave reenactors like won't break character, and it makes him feel really uncomfortable. And it's like those kinds of jokes are actually, I think those are both intelligent, but also talk about the racial, I don't want to say anxiety, but tension that still exists in the US. Not whatever the hell Tony Hinchcliffe just did last night. But to those saying that it's just a joke, it didn't matter, it didn't whatever. Well, I'm pulling up on the screen for the folks that are just listening. The BBC has an article where they interviewed a lot of Puerto Rican men and women, and they're saying like, we're not gonna forget that. And when you go down and you look at the number of Puerto Rican voters in swing states, this could seriously turn the tide. If Trump wasn't losing the election already, like if this was really just a coin flip, this could literally be the thing that pushes it over the edge for Kamala.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we haven't actually said the quote, so I don't know if we're going to. It does feel to me like it's extremely targeting of a race of people.
Sure.
And obviously Puerto Ricans are at the heart of it. And so I don't know. I don't want to really
bring
it up, but
I'm happy to play it. I mean, I feel like everyone, you know what? I'm not happy to play it. I feel like everyone has already heard it. So in fact, what I am going to play, I think, is even worse than Tony Hinchcliffe. I know. Now you, we were talking while the rally was going on, and you weren't watching it in its entirety, which was very smart, but I think I spent 6 hours that day listening, watching, tweeting about, going absolutely just bonkers.
You were in the trenches.
Yeah, and I think somebody put together a nice video here, which I'll play, which is more about the audio. Again, for the people who are listening, it's all about the audio. There is some music over it, which is whatever, but it's really the point of this person's video is it wasn't really about the jokes. It actually listened to what the real people who were being serious were saying. Never mind how bad what Tony Hinchcliffe was saying, but let's listen to this collection of what others were saying.
All right.
They want to kill us, and the Palestinians are taught to kill us at 2 years old. And Harris wants to bring them to you. She is the devil, whoever screamed that out. She is the Antichrist.
You guys need to get angry right now.
We need to slaughter this other people.
Illegals swarming our streets.
The fucking illegals that get whatever they want, don't they?
Kamala Harris is the first Samoan Malaysian low IQ.
But bitch, the whole fucking party, a bunch of degenerates. Low lives, Jew haters, and low lives.
They will say in 2024, something happened in America. Something happened, a phenomenon and it was galvanized around a bunch of people called MAGA. The MAGA people! The MAGAs!
So like I said, that definitely was worse. What do you make of that?
I find it hard to stomach the idea that they held this rally to just have sort of like, you know, just is a hate rally. I don't have a better word for it. They got together and they just talked about how much they hate the other, and they had a couple to choose from there. And it's, oh God, it's just so disquieting. I don't like it at all.
I started, Tony Hinchcliffe came on, we had it on the TV. I have a 6-year-old son, as you know, that's running around playing things. And what Tony was saying was ridiculous, but my son can't comprehend any of that. He's doing whatever. So already I'm like, man, this is just awful. And then these other guys come on. By the way, they're like, the Democrats only run, you know, campaigns of hate. This FNB only runs a campaign of hate. And it's like, do you hear?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like that. I don't understand. We've never been able to understand the Trump MAGA folks. They're detached from reality, and they have been for years. And it's because of things like this, where they'll project everything. They'll say the Dems run on a message of hate, and then they'll have in the same speech that they're doing this rally in, when they're talking about how she's Kamala Harris is Samoan or whatever, because he's a goddamn clown.
Right.
I don't even like, what is the point of that? Like, you're clearly just being like, that's race bait nonsense.
Yeah. What is it?
What else could it be?
What does it even confused? Mean? Yeah. Like, what
you
is are, it?
You don't, yeah. You're not confused that she might be Samoan. You're not that dumb, are you?
No, well, I mean, it is Tucker Carlson. So, you know, he could be that dumb. But no, you're exactly right. It's just race baiting. It's just hatred. There's literally, I watched 6 hours of it. I could not tell you if I was looking at it objectively, which obviously I wasn't, but if I was looking at it objectively, I couldn't leave there with a policy plan that to me meant, oh, my life is going to change for the better if we elect Trump, right? Like, it was 6 hours of a hate concert.
It was a hate concert. There was no policy. They didn't, like you said, they didn't have any substance other than we don't like minorities. Yeah. Obviously they're, you know, the worst,
it was a hate. They played all of their greatest hits at they're a band. They're the MAGA band. And it was, you know, fuck immigrants was track one, and she's a stupid low IQ bitch was track two. And it just like went, it just, that was it. There was no policy in there.
So it's frustrating, obviously, because that in and of itself is just horrible.
Right.
It's abject, horrific speeches one after the other.
Right.
But then the reporting on this event.
Oh, Jesus.
As if it were another run-of-the-mill rally, like they were trying to drum up their base to just like they were doing stump speeches. They weren't doing political stump speeches. They weren't talking about policy. They weren't talking about change. They weren't talking about anything that would actually help people. It was a hate rally, and everybody reported on it like this is a Trump political rally, and it was, and boy, was it something. And then nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, I think
you just played this compilation video for me that I think would perfectly summarize what happened at this political rally.
Right.
Big air quotes.
Right.
And no mainstream media source that I can think of put a headline out there that said like hate rally or whatever. Like how are they not calling a spade at this point?
Oh, by the way, I just learned. Hey, can we just take an aside here? I have to stop saying call a spade a spade. So I did not know that had some.
We're gonna get the anti-PC.
I got people in Blue Sky. Okay.
Okay.
But I think I said it there, and they were like, "Oh no, I said it on Twitter." I think I said it on Twitter. And somebody was like, hey, you know that that has racist connotations? And I was like, I did not. Because when I look, when I actually looked it up, where originally, of course, it didn't, and then of course it did, and now, you know, it's back to its general meaning of, you know, it is what you're calling it out for what it is, right? You're calling something what it is. I even in my dumb brain, because I never even thought about the saying, and I'm a poker player, you know, I've been playing poker all my life. I even thought spade wasn't even like the actual the farming spade. You know, like I was like, you call a spade a spade, like you call a diamond a diamond, or a heart a heart, or a club a club. It was just anyway, that's just a quick aside. I actually didn't know that. That's to say, how hard is it for me now to be like, all right, maybe I won't say that anymore. And like, I'm
well,
in my
I have another saying that I use when I mean that, which I think has less racial undertones. So I'll just try that. I'll say, well, why won't they call it, you know, balls and strikes? We'll turn it into baseball.
I like all strike is strike.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, that's just to say, man, it's not that hard to learn. Like, why is this so difficult for them? They it's so much easier for these people to hate and be racist and ignorant than it is to learn that the world around you is changing. And and frankly, being an American, or going back to when America was great, was always a time of not, I won't say the word massive immigration because it has like another negative connotation with it, but lots of immigration in this country, and where immigrants, like we've talked about on several episodes, are part of the glue and the fiber of this country that holds it together.
Well, and for a long time, we were proud of our immigration roots.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a certain amount of, you know, Ruby lens, looking through the Ruby lenses of that one. But
I mean, we can go back to the, you know, to the early 1900s, where when it was the Irish and the Italians that were immigrants, they were the dumb, dirty, lazy, you know, whatever. But, and so
I think that, and in fact, this is so strange, but I think that it was really well reflected in the movie Gangs of New York, where they were like the Irish, because of the potato famine, they had the Irish people coming off the boats and stuff, and you had the real New Yorkers or the real Americans who are like, you know, fighting for their place in the world in which they lived, and they're saying the same things you hear here. It's not about improving anything.
No.
It's about the status quo, where they're in control and they're the power of the day.
It's
and
all
they
power.
See the change coming.
Yeah.
And they don't like it.
Yeah.
In fact, I was having a really interesting conversation with my wife, where we were talking about how MAGA, the phrase Make America Great Again, has some like deeper sort of racial tones to it, because it sort of implies that like the current state of things isn't good. What it is right now, America, is bad. It sort of presupposes that, right? And then they're like, we want to take it back to when it was great.
Yes.
And if you talk to a person of color, you know, black people,
they go, tell me when that was.
Yeah, they go, hold on.
Hold on a second.
It wasn't very good before for us. So who are you making America great again for?
Yeah.
And why is it not me? Like that, I mean, there's definitely a lot to be said for the messaging there,
right?
Like, I don't see, you know.
So another really great book, How Fascism Works by Jason Stanley, which I just read for the second time last week. One of the things it talks about is these slogans: America First, Make America Great Again. Hitler did the same thing: Make Germany Great Again. You know, these slogans talk to a mythical time back when you know, when the patriarchy was in control, or you, the person that they're talking to, the white people, the pure blood Germans, when you had this incredible power over your nation, that you really, it's always been the same, you know. And now it's the same. It's like, make America great again, go back to this time when the white landowner male was the provider of the family. And you didn't, and the blacks, you know, had their, sure, they had their own stores and their own neighborhoods, but they couldn't come into ours, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot in American history, around the times of like segregation and doing away with those systems. And I don't know. I think that I was blind to it. In reading about some of these things, like you're talking about like sundowning towns and things like that, I'm going, oh my dear God, how on earth did this country operate this way for so long? I mean, and it's mind blowing.
Yeah, it is. And I mean,
and getting back to it, that's what I think that they mean when they say make America great.
Oh, it 100% is what they mean.
It's more dog whistle. Question. It's more. Yeah. It's
ask just them to give you a date. Give me a date and time. First of all, they'll probably, if they're trying to not be like, oh, I better not give civil, you know, I better think about this.
1820.
Yeah. Or they'll give you a time when a Democrat was president. You know, they'll give you a Roosevelt. They'll give you a Barack Obama FDR, or a JFK. Yeah, yeah. They don't realize what they're doing, you know? So, give me a date.
JFK.
Give me a date but even JFK, right? We had all the civil rights issues of those times, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Man. I don't know, I find it interesting. And I think that it's really interesting to see who gloms onto these movements and like just sort of what that says about them. So we talk about this particular person a lot, but Elon Musk obviously is now globbed onto the MAGA movement, and he, dark MAGA, which I don't think he understands.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah. I think if he could get away with saying MAGA but edgy, you know, because that's what he wants to be.
He is the edgelord of the internet, right? Yeah.
He wants to be an edgelord. Yeah. So, you know, he globs onto that. There was an episode of Philosophy Tube that came out today. Abigail Thorne, I think, you know, everybody should check her out. A great just think pieces, sort of visual audio essays.
Okay.
And she was talking about the mindset of these billionaire types who have seemed to fall victim. And again, she does a very good job of citing her sources from actual articles of studies, you know, psychological, philosophical studies that have been done, where they're like, I don't understand why people don't see things my way. Like that's the thing in their craw is, if only people could see things as I see them, then we would all agree. So what I need to do is change the messaging, change how people think, change what we all want to be what I want, and everyone will be happier for it. So it's the same idea of like monarchy and authoritarianism and techno-authoritarianism, and like just going down this aisle of like, if I can just get everybody to do this thing, everyone will be happy and great. And I think that, especially for Elon, because I think that his brain's a little addled, but I think he thinks he's trying to save us. I think he truly believes that, which seems a little far-fetched, but if you look at it in this one particular sort of vantage, I think he thinks that he has that position of, if I could just get everyone to understand that we need to have like multi-planetary establishments and we need to be able to do these things, and the only way to save humanity is if you listen to me, and then the ends justify the means.
So I'm gonna go half and half on this with you. I agree with you in that I believe he thinks colonizing Mars is a great step for humanity, and I might even agree with that on its, you know, in a vacuum, right?
Yeah,
like yeah, we probably need to be a multi-planetary species, especially if we're destroying the one that we're currently on. But maybe first focus on correcting the issues here. So I half agree on that, but then I'm going to use Occam's razor here for the second half and say the stuff that he's doing with Trump, money and power. It's that simple. But
that gets to the point that I think that I was trying to make based on this talk from Philosophy Tube, is that he thinks he needs the power to be able to change everyone's mind.
Sure, maybe. I mean, is that why he bought Twitter? He just wanted to get he wanted to get his opinion out in front of everyone because he believes we'll be better for it once we just do it Elon's way. Like when he designed his first car for Tesla. Not that. Okay.
And I'm doing a disservice to Philosophy Tube and Abigail and their great.
We'll put a link to the YouTube channel in the notes.
But it definitely is. It does sort of put that. I think it makes me think that he bought Twitter because of that, that underlying thing of like, if I can just get people to see it the way I see it, I'm so much smarter and so much, and I'm richer because of it. And if anyone could just understand my thinking, then they would get it too. And then in order to do that, he had to buy basically a platform where the free market decides who has the best ideas and force his ideas on everybody, because he just needs them to understand. It's a really interesting concept. Yeah. And I think that I see a lot of it in him specifically.
Yeah. I want Trump to argue, not so much.
I think Trump just wants power and money so he can have power and money.
Well, I don't think Trump's smart enough to do it in any other way. Here's what I really think has been going on with Trump in this current campaign, and why everybody is so quick to call it fascism now, is I think Stephen Miller has been whispering in his ear. Unfortunately, Stephen Miller is basically the campaign manager at this point.
He's new Goebbels.
He has been whispering in his ears the things to say and do. And then Trump, in with his sponge-riddled broken brain, is going out there and saying the literal fascist stuff out loud. He's like, no. We need to do this, act like this, do these dog whistles. But then he's just going out there and being like, bah, you know?
Yeah. So I mean, you saw it too in the only presidential debate, Howard, where he fell on that simple talking point about them eating the Haitian migrants eating dogs and cats.
Right.
And it's exactly what you're saying, because that's that, and another YouTuber who's great, Cody Johnson over at the Some More News team, they did like an entire episode on this, and they were pointing out that like this is all dog whistle stuff. And it's very simple Republican stuff that they would do, where they would say, we heard from a source who claims that their dog was eaten by their neighbor who are Haitian. And it's not supposed to do anything except to rile up the racist people in their base and get them energized, which is what we talk about all the time. It's like you need your voter base to be energized to win an election. That's the reason they do it. Trump's brain, I don't know if he's got the RFK Jr. brain worms or not, but he doesn't see the value of the dog whistle. He just likes being racist.
Right.
So he comes out and says the thing,
and he's screaming,
laughs at it because it's such a stupid thing.
Yeah. 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 So that's my point. He doesn't know how to do, and maybe this is great for us.
He doesn't have nuance.
Yeah. He doesn't know how to do this right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So a lot of people who I feel, I'm not giving a lot of these, there's a lot of Republicans that are coming out right now, Dick Cheney, for instance. There are a lot of these Republicans that are going, well, there's no way I can support this guy. I'm not
Is he going to shoot him in the face?
Yeah. Well, I wish they would go out hunting.
That's all Dick Cheney's
good for. I wish they would go out hunting together. But they don't, I kind of lost my train of thought here.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Shoot him in the face. Yeah, that's right. I didn't want to give them enough credit, because Trump is being so overtly fascist that they're afraid that they're going to lose their party forever. They need to try and reel it in a little bit. If Trump loses the election, try to snap off the MAGA branch, push it away, and take control back of their party like they did with the Tea Party. But unfortunately,
yes.
I think what's happening with the MAGA sect is, imagine 2028 now. Let's say Kamala wins, 2028 rolls around. No, it doesn't matter who the pick a top Republican candidate right now, a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio. Now imagine them
having to be like a Marjorie Taylor Greene or a Loan Barber or
whatever. Because if they're not that, they're going to lose the MAGA sect of the Republican
the
Party,
sect.
Which is right now it feels like the majority of the Republican Party.
They're definitely. Well, they're the energized majority at the moment. I think that there's probably a lot of crossover from before Trump time who are Republicans and were, you know, loudly so, and they wanted lower taxes and they wanted, you know, blah, blah, blah. All the
Republicans never deliver on, but
But those policy talking points specifically, they would parrot, you know, they want to secure the border, they want guns and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And when Trump came along, I think he just fired those people up to be, you know, like you said about the Tea Party, just getting them energized to a level that they weren't before.
But that's the thing. They're supercharged now, right? And some of them, including I have family that are like this, that I think were, we could have reasonable debates about policy, You know, but now they're so supercharged and over the top that the only conversations I can have with them is, why is Biden in bed with the Chinese? And you're like, what the I'm like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking. I don't even know what you're talking about. Like,
no. And it's like, but even that, that's something that you could at least understand. You could be like, that makes sense to me, but like, they're eating the dogs and the cats, or they're like, they're bussing people in across the country line and then they're having them vote. And I'm like, have you ever been and voted?
But that's the, but it's, yeah.
So what's the first thing you do when you get to a polling place? Is it, I would like one or two ballots, please? And they're like, sure, come on in. No, they ask you for your place of address. They check that you live where you claim to live. And so like, how would any of these things hold up at face value? You know,
I don't, but it's working. It's the same people that are telling me like their number one issue right now is, trans women playing women's volleyball, and you're, and I'm like, what it is?
Name one.
Yeah, like, okay, one there person. there was one team, there was one college team that was like, we're not going to play that other team because they have a trans woman on that team and she's stronger than the rest of us. Okay, sort it out. Let them sort it out. But you're telling me the party of freedom and liberty and whatever is now like, what are you going to do? Mandate collegiate sports at the government level because of the, and that's your biggest issue? So you're going to vote to take your rights away, take your bodily autonomy away, higher taxes because one time a trans woman just wants to play volleyball? So like, that's your that's your issue?
For our listeners, I want to make it very clear
that I've got a vein popping out of my head.
You do. And what we stand about here, what we stand for, and what we believe in. And we're very much in the camp of like, just don't fuck with other people.
Don't hurt
That's
people.
Really as far as it goes. If you can actually live by some of Christ's teachings, it's like the do unto others bit. That's the top of the pile here. So if you're trans, good on you. It doesn't affect us in any way.
But these are the
great. Live your life. We want you to be happy.
These are the stupid people we're dealing with. Somebody close to me said, I don't want the government to control women's bodies. That's why I want it to be a state's right, a state's thing. And I'm like, do you fucking, what? So you don't want the government, you don't want the federal government, but you want state and local governments to, what are you talking about?
Well, and it's blue sedition. That's what they're worried about. They don't want us in California, New York to dictate policy for the state that they're in.
Yeah.
So I know that I have relatives who live in Oklahoma, and they're very worried about us just acting by fiat or reigning by fiat and just having changes that they didn't vote for shoved down their throat. And I understand that to a point, but to another point, I'm not going to cater to you living in the dark ages either.
Right.
If you're part of the United States, then you come along with us because that's how democracy works.
This is it. Yeah.
So I'm reminded of, I brought this up before too, when California had set basically a goal for, we are no longer going to allow gas-powered vehicles to be sold in California, that's tantamount to just fiat decree of there are no more gas cars in the United States because it's, you know, the biggest market.
Right.
If you lose your biggest market, you're not going to cater
for it. And by the way, even that I had issues with it. I thought that was controversial. I am for like, I'd love it if we could go completely electric or some other form of energy. By the way, I'm pro nuclear. I don't know if that's a thing that we'll talk about that at some point. But you know, California stepping in and saying like, that's it, no more gas cars. To me, there's like, okay, what kind of research have we done that to show that this will not hurt people who are, working class, middle class, who can't just go afford to, when it's time for them to buy a new car, because they will eventually have to, they can afford purchasing electric cars. So we need to make sure when we're writing these policies, when we're doing these policies, that it's not intrinsically hurting the people that we say we're here to lift up, you know?
I don't want to get bogged down in electric vehicles because I mean, we could spend an entire episode talking about that around this policy and how it would affect other states. That's one of the Blue Sedition things is I want us to be able to do this type of policy change locally that basically has ripples into the states that refuse blue leadership.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
But even then, just putting a line in the sand starts the conversation because there were states arguing with it. They were suing California to try and get this, you know, off the books, basically saying that it's illegal for us to say we're no longer going to allow the sale of gas-powered vehicles.
I couldn't even tell you if it is still on the books. Like that feel like that happened 20 years ago. I mean, I know it was just a couple of years ago, but it feels like
the point is that it starts that conversation. It gets the debate raging and it makes people think about it. Like you're saying, well, how will that affect the you know, the most in danger of having like a vehicle failure and needing to purchase a new one? Does that mean that cars are suddenly going to be 2-3 times more expensive? Like, how does that affect working class people? And I understand, I'm with you 100% that maybe it's a bit draconian, but we need to think about these things. And the only way to do it is to force the conversation.
Right.
If we do nothing, if we assume that we will be saved by inactivity, then I've got news for you. Roe v. Wade, we all thought the same thing.
Right.
And by doing nothing, term after term, president after president, not codifying it, it was overturned by malicious actors.
Well,
doing nothing isn't working and we haven't tried anything else.
We need to come up
with something.
Yeah. We need to, you know, when Kamala wins, I'm going to say when Kamala wins.
We're going into the when column.
Kamala wins, we definitely... Oh, wow. I hit the audio on something. Luckily, you guys couldn't hear that. it was loud in my ear. When she wins, we need to talk about these things. We can no longer. I think we're done being the party that runs on abortion rights, that runs on legalizing marijuana, that runs on these things. And we need to be the party that acts on these things.
Do you know how we do that?
How do we do that?
We have to end the filibuster. We have to shave my head.
Let's do it. Let's end the filibuster. Look. I mean, I already did it because I'm ready for it. So.
Yes, you sure are. But I mean, I feel like this horse is so dead. I have been beating this dead horse forever, but it needs to be flogged again. The problem with the Senate is their agreement across the aisle that we don't need to take a stance on anything. And by having the filibuster in place, no vote that could potentially damage someone's political position will come to vote. It will just be either threatened or actually filibustered.
Yes.
And then no one has to take a hard stance.
Right.
Taking a stance on Roe v. Wade codifying abortion at any level in the federal government is going to have political ramifications.
Yes.
No matter where you're from. If you're in California, it's going to have political ramifications. And it really depends on like where you are from. Because there's cultural and religious implications of the areas that you come from. But by saying we aren't going to vote on this, none of your electorate will ever see that you had to make that hard choice as their elected official.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're not doing politics. You're not helping anybody. You're not moving the needle. It's the status quo. And now it's just bickering.
And this is what's really interesting is this is why we're calling November Rovember, right? Is because Republicans have ignored what the Supreme Court, what Donald Trump and the Supreme Court is doing, Republican politicians, they've abstained from voting on these things. And now their own bases are saying, you allowed this to happen. And now they're going to lose they're going to lose their jobs over it. I hope a lot of them.
To God that we are in the find out period.
It seems like
MAGA politics.
I'm really, really hopeful, but it seems like we are. I want to switch gears for a minute here. And God, do you know who got out of jail today?
Was it me?
No, I think you've been out for a while.
Okay.
You know who got out of prison today? Steve Bannon. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Steve Bannon. Yeah.
Steve Bannon got out of prison.
Yeah,
he got out of prison today. He looks in
prison for what? For sedition? Not no, or
I don't even remember.
I think it was just like
it's hard to
contempt of court or something. I don't think it was like an actual hard sentencing. He wasn't there for the insurrection.
He was in for four months. Subpoena
violating
for defying a subpoena.
Right. They subpoenaed him and then he didn't show, and then they gave him another chance and he didn't show again, and then they just arrested him.
Okay, so he's out now, and I just want to share this because I love this guy, and I don't know if people know.
Steve Bannon?
No, not Steve Bannon. Oh. Thank you for calling me out on that. I do not love Steve Bannon. I love his name is Robbie Roadsteamer. That's what he goes by. Have you heard of him?
I have not heard of this.
So he's the guy, he goes to like Trump rallies and like Trump meetup, wherever they are. He looks like, he's like me. If I had worn like a flannel and maybe taken my glasses off, you'd be like, oh, look at this fucking skinhead Trump supporter, right? Like this,
okay.
This guy looks like a Trump supporter. He looks all like, right. He wears the, you know, he puts the glasses on. He's got the, he's like, yeah, let's go. And he goes to these Trump rallies and he gets them to sing songs and stuff where it's making fun of them. It's like making fun of Trump. He's fantastic. He's hilarious. He's
going to make me deeply uncomfortable.
No, no, this one's funny though. So he goes, Steve Bannon gets out of jail and he gets out of prison. He goes to Steve Bannon's press conference and he asks Steve a question. So let's listen to what happens here.
Steve. That's what I wanted.
Steve, Robbie Roadsteamer here. I'm wondering when's the next insurrection, and can we storm the Burger King after this? Like, can we do that? I mean, doesn't he look great now? We were in Danbury the first month together. He looks great. You don't remember me? We were lifting weights and stuff in the weight room. When's the next insurrection? How are we going to do this and stuff, man? You know what? If I'm leaving, I'm having a good time. He looks like Yoda with AIDS right now. Robbie Rose,
Yoda with AIDS.
Violence, people. This place smells like mothballs.
This place smells like mothballs.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, he's a parody guy.
So he was at the Madison Square Garden and he was getting everybody in the crowd while they were standing in line, and he was just going, who's gonna raid the CBS? Let's storm the CBS. Yeah. So he's one of those guys. So
yeah, he's like a redneck Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah. So, but can we just take a? Can we just zoom in here? Can I zoom in here? Is this guy look more orange than ever to you? Like, what is this thing
with the hair? If he had just a tinge of green, he'd look like an Oompa Loompa.
What's the deal with the going orange for these guys?
Okay, I mean, and this is more of the God King thing, where these guys are, they're praying at the altar of Trump, and so if
that's
they don't look like Trump, I mean, you've seen it, I'm sure, the pictures of these MAGA people, the talking heads, going around and standing with the posture like Trump has, where he's like on his tiptoes but leaning forward.
Yeah.
They look like
DeSantis started doing it after, like, well, when he was even running. Yeah.
Yeah, DeSantis. Oh man, that's great.
Yeah, he's a whole episode.
Yeah, and I remember like. George Santos was standing that way when he was like when they had the presidential address of both chambers of Congress. It's like him and not Raphael, the other guy. Anyway, a bunch of MAGA people in there, sort of in name only. They're Republicans, but you know when
they're
Trump
MAGA loses, when it's a MAGA Republican president.
He's going to end up calling them rhinos once from prison or something.
Sure.
But
yeah.
And they're all standing this way. You're just like, what on earth? And then they've got the bronzer on to the point where they're kind of orange. And
it's a very strange thing for a party that is seemingly doing a bunch of dog whistling to white supremacists, that they slather themselves until they basically look like they're doing blackface. I mean,
you know what? I wonder, we did this as a bit. Before the podcast, but we had like a thing where we both had the old powdered wigs,
right?
Because we were like old timey senators. It was like a gag, But I wonder if that's just like sort of the same thing. I wonder if it was like
one guy started doing it, like George Washington.
The king did this powdered wig thing because he's kind of crazy. Yeah. And then like his sycophants were like, I'm going to do a powdered wig too. Yeah, I'm like, going to look good like that. And then these guys are doing Tanner and standing weird.
It's the emperor's, and, the emperor has no clue.
And they're all talking thing, right? Like with their big hands now. Yeah. And then they say something that's really important that got just the, it's just this. But
yeah.
And it makes me wonder how much of that is like mob think. I bet you that there's a book out there, the psychology of like mob think and how politics like shapes people in these ways.
Well, there's certainly, I know there have been books because it was big when Obama was running about how changing your tone, your pacing and your speech makes you a more palatable leader and more respected. And Obama, you can look at people speaking before and then people speaking after and
sure,
clear differences.
I mean, it gets into the zeitgeist. I know for a fact, like even the hands thing, I do the hands thing. And it's probably because I've been forced to watch a lot of these Trump nonsense speaks, but like sometimes you just have to go like, I'm shouting with my hands. And I need you to just focus on it.
Yeah. I mean, I make fun of him so much. Like I'm doing it right now. I make fun of him so much that I find myself doing this. Like when my wife and I are going for walks around the neighborhood or whatever, I'll make fun of him and I'll do the thing. But then I find when I'm talking normally, I'm starting to do the thing too.
Now, neither you or I are wearing, bronzer and
I have no makeup on for the stream, as you can probably tell.
And I'm not calling people like low IQ or anything.
It's amazing. And maybe, look, maybe we can go back and we can blame. We should probably find out the company the makeup brand that Trump uses for that bronzer. Maybe something is seeping into his skin and his brain.
You think he's having like a toxic effect?
Could
like
just be. Yeah. I mean, he is toxic. So this could be, it could be that.
Yeah. If it's like an old timey one that he used back in the 80s and it turns out that it's got like a lot of lead in it. And it's finally like built up in his brain.
Yeah. And maybe RFK is using the same one. That's why he's out, hand sawing whale heads and dragging them into the car and stuff. I don't know. It's hard to say. That guy, can we just, that guy.
You want to talk about RFK for a minute?
He's going to lead like the FDA?
No. Well.
Or the.
I thought it was like Health and Human Services.
Yeah.
Is he, HHS or something.
He's gonna tell us what's okay to put in our body and what isn't?
The anti-vax guy is going to tell you to ignore the CDC if there is a CDC.
If there probably won't be a CDC anymore if Trump wins.
I think that Trump in his has basically taken his experience of being president the first time and blames the CDC for him losing.
Oh, for sure.
He's like, if it weren't for the CDC, there would have been no pandemic. Like, I think that's his reasoning.
Right. It has to be. I don't really. Yeah. Okay. I think there was one other thing I wanted to touch on, and I actually don't have the video queued up. Let me see if I can just find it really quickly. We'll just talk about it.
Let's just talk
about it. Last night, and I can bring it up here. Last night, I don't want to use this site. I'm not using the Washington Post ever again.
Do we need to talk about that?
Actually, let's talk about that. Let's talk about.
Why do we need to not use the Washington Post ever again?
Why do we need to not use the Washington Post ever again? So for the first time in the last, I don't know what it was, 40 years or something like that, the Washington Post decided that they were not going to endorse a presidential candidate. There's a lot of moving parts here. So let's just start from the editorial board. Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to ask, when did the Washington Post start?
It's a...
doing presidential recommendations. What do they call it? Endorsements.
Endorsements. Yeah, yeah. That's a good question. Why don't we get to the bottom of that for our listeners?
I have a hunch.
Okay.
And I want to confirm it.
Okay.
And of course, the top like seven is. I don't want to deal with that. It's all of it. All I can get right now is the news of them not making an endorsement. No, My suspicion is that this started in a lead up. Post Watergate, my guess is that public trust of presidential officials, presidents themselves, or presidential candidates, where is that an all-time low?
Okay. Wait. So tell me,
yeah,
who was the Washington Post's first presidential endorsement?
Well, it means it has to be Nixon then, right?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
LBJ? I'll give you a very big hint.
Okay.
We've already talked about him on this episode.
RFK Jr.?
Nope. Oh. RFK Jr. would never ran for president.
I know. That's
you were just being silly. Okay.
I don't know. JFK?
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, no.
1976. Jimmy Carter was their first presidential. How crazy is that? I actually didn't even realize that, how much this all ties in together with this potentially being the last year Jimmy Carter is going to vote in a presidential election. I mean, he's 100 years old.
You're going to dedicate an episode of this podcast to getting Jimmy to recant his sins, aren't you? You're going to be like, Jimmy, come on the podcast and say you're sorry for these 12 things.
I want him to say he's sorry for what he did in his second, running in his second term and losing to Reagan. And he really screwed things up. And I could do a whole episode on that because I'm going to keep going. You don't do this to me. You're trying to get me to go off the rails. I could feel
the Washington Post.
Presidential 38 years. Is that what's 1970? That's 48 years. Math is hard. I'll say 48 years. That sounds right. So for the last 48 years, they've been doing presidential endorsements. And this year they decided to stop. Now, as you know, or maybe you don't know, Amazon's Jeff Bezos is the recent owner last couple of years. Time is so difficult post-COVID.
Yeah, I think it's 4 or 5. Like, it's not a lot of time.
Okay, but it's still more than I'm probably thinking. He bought the Washington Post. And he basically left it alone. I don't know how very true that is. But they also, I think there
10
were
10 years ago.
Okay. So I think there was periods of time, by the way, there might've been at least one or two other times where they didn't endorse a presidential candidate. Nonetheless, you could argue, as you've made the case in the beginning of this show, that this is probably the most important, at least of our lifetime, the most important presidential election of our lives. Right. And so they decide not to make an endorsement. And now Bezos has come out and said, for all these reasons, we want to go back to being neutral and just sharing the news and blah blah blah. And that's a great thing to say. If you had said it 2 years ago, a year ago, before we got this close to the election, not only did they not do it,
value in it.
Well, so it definitely made headlines. But not only did he wait until what we've got like a week left to go, his editorial board drafted the endorsement for Kamala, had it all written up. All it needed was a stamp from the brass and it goes into the paper. Same thing, by the way, with the LA Times. Not only did they have the draft already written, but the LA Times, maybe you don't know this because this was kind of breaking news in the last couple of days, had a week-long series planned for this week, the week Tuesday to Tuesday, reading up to the election, called The Case Against Donald Trump. Both of those things have been scrapped from the LA Times, and now this endorsement scrapped from the Washington Post. Both owned by billionaires. Tell me that it's about being bipartisan and neutral and what it's absolutely not that.
Okay. Starting there, I want to just pose the thought, why do we care if our news affiliations are unbiased? Like, I want somebody reporting the news to report on the news in an unbiased way. But every human has their biases. Like,
right.
you and I have them. Everybody has them. It's just the way that you think by default, based on the upbringing you had, the world you've lived in, the life you've led. You can't get away from it.
Right.
There are fields of study that literally people spend their entire lives working on how we can get past our own biases. So to try and pretend that this newsroom that you're running is going to be bias-free or unbiased or neutral or whatever is just kind of a farce.
I mean, it's simply, yeah, even in statistics, we can talk about 538, Real Clear Politics, all of these places, even in statistics where it's supposed to be, here's the numbers I'm putting in front of you. The bias is put in so many different ways. It could be in how you present the numbers to the public. It could be in how you collected the statistics. There's bias in literally everything, okay? Even facts, there is some sort of bias in how you display that to people.
So I have to say this quote because it's one of my favorites that's come out of this that I probably reintroduced to, but this is from Eli Wiesel, I think. And he says, quote, "We must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. Sometimes we must interfere. When human lives are endangered, when human dignity is in jeopardy, national borders and sensitivities become irrelevant." And I just think that if you claim to run an editorial staff that is like for the free press, for educating the masses who read your thing, you have to take this sort of quote to heart. And by choosing not to endorse a presidential candidate, you're very loudly winking at many, many people that you are endorsing Trump.
I mean, you're right. It's the if you're staying silent, if you're choosing not to do this, it's normally because you're siding with the oppressor. I mean, that's a fantastic quote. And you can just, it's so damn obvious. Bezos lost a multi-billion dollar contract with the federal government during Trump's administration with the Pentagon, the Pentagon using AWS, Amazon's web services. This is so clearly a quid pro quo situation. You know,
yeah, it's just trying to sneak back in. He's like, if I do this little back scratch for you, then maybe we'll have this conversation when you're president about getting me back into the money bin.
The man is literally, Donald Trump, the man is literally attacking the free press and newspapers, journalists just asking him simple questions as the enemy of the people. There shouldn't be a single paper. I mean, even, I don't care how biased conservative you are, and maybe I'll give them a slide because we know how bad they are, but it's even hard to do. There shouldn't be a single paper that endorses Donald Trump on that alone.
Yeah.
So.
I think, oh my God, you hit me so hard right there. That was really good. I like that. I want to say that going back to the biases thing and speaking against those sorts of things, I just wanted to bring up really quickly in closing about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders came out with a public statement about supporting Kamala Harris' campaign for president. And he makes it a very clear statement in saying that he does not agree with her position of supporting Israel's genocide in Palestine. And he's very vocally tough. He's hard with her. Like he's making it clear, I do not agree with her. I do not endorse this. I think that it's reprehensible. And then he says the thing that we all know. He says, however, I cannot tell you to vote for anyone but Kamala Harris. You must vote for her. And when she gets into office, we are going to fight with her to change this position. And I think that that's the difference between the two candidates that speaks to me the most, is that one of them can be reasoned with. I think
there's one of my favorite actors, John Cusack. He's very, very left on Twitter. I don't even know if he's doing movies right now. I mean, all I do is see him tweeting.
He's too busy. Yeah.
He's very, very left. He was a huge Bernie guy. He's been very, very anti Netanyahu's regime in Israel. And he brought up a fantastic point to all of these Green Party voters who, by the way, I sympathize with. I understand their position because I was in that position in 2016. Okay, so I understand where they're coming from, but
we're still in that position.
But I will say that I'm even more full throated. I hate that term, but I'm
it's
even
not
more,
a fun
it's
term.
Not a good term. Find a new term. I'm more full throated about my support for Kamala than I ever was about Hillary Clinton. because of this quote that John Cusack has been sharing. It's easier to move a politician than it is to move a fascist. And I think that is to exactly what Bernie is saying.
That's poignant. That felt good.
It's to the point, right? It's you know, Bernie is out there saying, oh, thank you. I got some news in. Bernie got some breaking news. I live in the flame because the flame is. I love my family because my family is kind. That my 6-year-old son just
wrote. Hey, there it is. So that's
breaking news. It's unlike Donald Trump is going to the press. They ask him a question about Israel, and he says, "I think the Biden administration is holding Netanyahu back. I think we should give him basically full reign to do whatever the hell he wants." And you're going to tell me as a Green Party voter that I just can't vote for Kamala Harris. I'm sorry. That's crazy.
Yeah. We're not going to have time to get into it today, but I do want to spend some time in a future episode to talk about the notion of voting for the lesser of two evils.
I do hate it.
You and I have had to do it for two elections in a row. We both voted for Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. Neither of us particularly liked the policies that either candidate brought to the table. We think that they were both more centrist Republican than anything. And I agree with your statement before about the Kamala Harris camp, at the very least making policy proposals that seem like they're moving the needle to the left, which works better for us. But even still, it's like you say, I don't see how you cannot vote for your best interests, even if it isn't the best possible interests.
Yeah, no, I... There's two real quick things. I know we got to wrap here. The way Bernie Sanders said it, I couldn't have said it better myself. We haven't really touched on the Israeli-Palestine conflict on the podcast. I think it's a very sensitive issue. I haven't even reasoned about how I wanted to talk about it to even bring it up on the show. So I thought that would have been a little irresponsible. So I really love the way that Bernie handled it. And thinking about how much I love the way that Bernie handled it, I forgot the second thing that I wanted to say. So
we'll touch on it in another episode,
which I do often. We will though. We'll talk about it. I just haven't really been ready to put it into words.
Okay.
But what's going over there is awful. Hopefully this new administration does the right thing. So
I agree. And this week, unfortunately, we're focusing inward on this election that is coming up next week. Just a reminder that Nate and I will be streaming election night live, covering as the polls close and as results start coming in. Come hang out with us. Should be, well, a time. We're hoping a fun time, but we can't promise anything unless you all voted.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be... I'll be going late. I don't know how late you'll be on. We'll try to go late. I don't think we're gonna be here long enough to get results, right? Like,
never know.
But yeah, you know, it could be a shocker. I think we're gonna see some shocking things. So I'm excited to be doing this live. Okay. Well, I think that's it for today. Thanks everyone for hanging out with us and going on that wobbly train ride I sometimes take us on. I really appreciate it. So until next time, have a great day and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.